So we're kicking off this new series called A Matter of Life and Death, and eventually where we're going to get to is talking about the question everybody wants to talk about. You know, you can walk through an airport and look into the bookstore of the airport, the ordinary bookstore, the common bookstore, and you can almost always find a book about heaven in the airport bookstore on the table that says, these are the books everybody wants to read. Because underneath the surface, it doesn't matter how people respond to us in real life, underneath the surface, God has said that he has put eternity in our hearts. So we got to work that out. We got to spend our days on this earth working that out. Some people have worked it out too. You get all the chances in the world. If this one doesn't work out, you come back, you get a do-over, and you try it again. Some people have worked it out. If this one doesn't work out, and if it doesn't work out good, you get a do-over. But when you come back, you really wish you'd done better the last time that we're here, because you're a rock this time, and that's not as great as it was the last time, but it's a do-over nonetheless. Some people have worked it out just to say, I'm going to believe that when we die, nothing happens. There's just a void of nothing at the end of this life. That's the way I'm going to resolve the tension I feel inside about how things play out when you die. But everybody thinks about it. I mean, death is the elephant in the room of life. And you cannot get around it. We have this phrase like we're trying to beat death. We're trying to avoid death, postpone death. Trying to do everything we can to make our lives healthy, to extend our time on this planet, because we know there is a reality, even though we really don't talk about it until we have to, called death. And people want to know what happens when you die. Where do you go when you die? Is there really a heaven that I can count on? And if there is it somewhere I want to go to? Because when I grew up, they kept saying heaven was about like streets of gold. And I mean, that sounded a little bit fascinating for a little while, but I was like, what kind of streets of gold? We're talking like Disney World streets of gold? Are we talking about, you know, Atlanta Falcons football, crazy Sunday afternoon streets of gold? Are we talking about dinner with friends streets? What kind of streets? What is it really like? And they kept talking about these angels and these harps and these choirs and how Moses would be there. And I like Moses, but I haven't been like dying to meet him, you know? And it's like, you know, it's like I kind of know a lot about his life. Like, hey, how are you? I already know his whole life story, you know? I mean, so when you're growing up looking at that, sometimes that's not the big motivator, right? Until they introduced hell. And then you're like, I'll take the streets of gold and the harps and Moses, man. Give me a heavenly choir. And I don't know if we're wearing robes or if we're flying around with the angels. I don't know, but it's better than going to H-E-double-L. Because everything that we've heard about that place is awful. And we wonder, what is this really like? Is this really where I want to go? And here's my hope. At the end of these few weeks together, I pray that God will so convince us that there is life after this life, and that there is an opportunity after this life to get a grand do-over, not based on our performance, but based on God's grace. And hello, that the do-over of eternal life with God is so much better than the life here right now, that we're not afraid of death. On the contrary, we are looking forward to death. Because we really do believe what we've been saying and singing all this time. That Jesus is gone to prepare a place for us. That there's going to be a new heaven and a new earth. And that we're going to be in paradise, people. You're like, well, what is it going to be like? Well, we'll talk about that in a few weeks. Is hell real? We're going to talk about that in a few weeks. What happens to you in that in-between time when you lose this life and step into that life? I want to unpack all of that over the next few weeks. But today, I just want to put a simple idea on the table. And it is this idea. You are on the way to your own funeral. Where are you going? To my funeral. Put it on your calendar. Put it in your iCal. That's where you're going today. It's to your funeral. I had the privilege yesterday of being at Bill's father's funeral, Henry Williams. I never met him. But in a moment like yesterday, when his son can paint a picture of his life, you discover the beauty of the fabric of a person's journey on planet Earth. And you celebrate a life lived well. And your heart breaks, and your tears are coming down your cheeks, and it's a hard place to stand in, and there is rejoicing, but, you know, when you lose your dad, there's only one moment in life like that. And it's one of the most brutal moments of the heart. And you feel all of that. And so there's joy, and there's sorrow, there's hope, and there's the sense of great pain. There's a celebration of the faithfulness, hopefully, of God, which was the case yesterday. And there's the celebration of the reverberation of Jesus in a human life, which was the case yesterday. But Bill, they still, you know, roll the casket down the aisle. And you still go to the grave. And you still put that body of the person that you love in the ground. And I just want to bring us around today. I know it's not maybe the most joyful jumping off point for this few weeks together, but I just want to bring us around that today, because death is the elephant in the room of life. And we're all headed there. And someone, your son, your daughter, your niece, your nephew, your coworker, your friend, your husband, your wife, they're going to stand up at a lectern. It's not going to last very long. I mean, an hour and a half, 30 minutes, and they're going to talk about your life, because you are done. And someone else is going to tell the story of you. And what I want to bring us around today is that in that moment, we want that story to be told a certain way. Because what God has put in our hands is a precious gift called life. I remember being on tour, and I think I've shared this at Passion City at some point with Chris Tomlin, when they were expecting their first child. And Chris had some crazy app on his phone or email he'd subscribed to that he got an email every single day that kind of told him what was going on with the baby being developed. Anybody gotten that email before or gotten on that website? What's happening in week one? What's happening in week two? What's happening in week three? And so he would share updates, because we were on the road for a couple of months, and he'd share a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And so I remember the day that he said, "Oh, wow." And I was like, what happened today? He goes, "This is the week where the heart starts to beat." And I'm like, "How does that happen?" He goes, "It doesn't say in here. It just says this is the week where the heart begins to beat." And if you go to any one of these websites, in fact, I would encourage you to do that in week five or week six, around the 22nd or 25th day from conception, somewhere in that little window of time, it just says, "And the heart starts to beat." So somehow this electric current from the mom's system shocks the little heart in the baby. And at this point in time, the baby is the size of a raisin. A raisin with a heart. And somehow electricity from the mom goes to the heart of the baby, and the baby's heart starts to beat, And even at that time in week 5 and week 6, you can hear the heartbeat in a raisin. And that heart begins to beat miraculously. That's the only way you could describe that. That should be in the footnote of all these little, you know, descriptors of what happens in this week and this week and this week. And the footnote is, and a miracle happened today. And another miracle happened today. And can you believe another miracle happened today? Because today, somehow, by the providence of God and the sovereignty of God and the wisdom and creativity of God, a little raisin-sized human being's heart started to beat. And it beats 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 until there's a day when it doesn't beat. And that's when you're gone. And if you've been there, that's that final sound. And that life was an electric current from God that miraculously came from God, and at the appointed moment returned to God. And for a little season of life, it resided in you. You know, you walk through a cemetery, which is a good thing to do, and you see these markers everywhere. Some of these are from an old Confederate cemetery, so we got some old guys here. There's E.L. Mason. Anybody related to E.L. Mason, by the way? Just checking. He was born in 1835 and died in 1920. That's a pretty good run right there, I'll tell you. That wasn't easy to do. That was not easy to do. Another one here, we've got a John George Vandergeesen. He started out in 1888, and he died in 1950. This next one is Fanny Shockley Taylor, born in 1880, died in 1950. That's an old cemetery. Here's Frank Sangs. He was born in 1871. And died in 1948. That's Joseph Ashoff Jr., 1923. Died a few years ago in 2006. Robert L. Young, he was a trumpet player and a friend of jazz. He was born in 1928, bless him. He died in 2012. And you know, you walk through the cemeteries of our city and just find tens of thousands of these. And they're moms and dads and grandmas and granddads and sons and daughters. And some of these people live incredibly long lives, and some of them live painfully short lives. And in every time you're in a cemetery, you always notice those little ones that'll have a stuffed animal or a toy. You see a little child that maybe lived a few weeks or a few days or maybe a few years. All different names, all different styles. Some of them are tall, some of them are pointy, some of them are long, some of them are flat on the ground. Some of them have real flowers, some of them have plastic flowers, but they all have one thing in common. Do you see what it is, what every one of those six tombstones has in common? What do they all have in common? Different years, born 1923, died 1920, 1948, 2012, but they all have one thing in common. And the one thing they all have in common is they all have the dash. They have that little line between the day that their heart started beating and they entered into this world, and they have that little marker between the year that they left this earth, and in between is a dash. And a lot of people have talked about this, that life's not so much about when you were born. It's really not so much about when you died. Life is about the dash. It's about what happened in that little dash that's in between. So here we are. Our bodies are laid in the ground. Our friends and family, if they want, can come and visit us. And what you see there of the story, if you don't know the person, is they were born here, they died here, and all we really have time to tell you right now is that their life was this dash in between. That in between arriving on earth and leaving earth, there's a dash. That dash may be 7 years long or 70 years long or 97 years long, but it's all a dash just the same. And what we want to talk about today is we're coming to open up this new series is what are we going to do with that dash? What are we going to do with the dash? Because we already know when you were born. God already knows when you're going to die. But what's up for grabs today is what we do with the dash in between. In between this little miraculous heartbeat that begins when we're the size of a raisin. And that moment where our heart beats the very last time. And then our journey on earth is over. What do we do with the dash? And it's amazing to me how we avoid the elephant in the room. When the elephant of death in the room possibly is the greatest gift that God can give us in life on this earth. I know why there's death, because sin entered into the world in the garden. I know why we die, because the wages of sin is death. I know this world is broken and it's not what God intended. And I know that that's how it all works. But I also wondered, like you do, why is it like that? Why is this a part of the journey of our lives? And honest to God, I believe it's a part of the journey of our lives, because on this broken planet, we can get so easily distracted and deceived and confused. And if there's not a funeral to go to, we forget how precious the dash is. And when we walk out of every funeral we go to, we say, I'm going to make my dash count. I'm going to change the way I live. I'm going to modify some things in my journey. I'm going to become a different kind of person. I'm going to treat people differently. I'm going to start talking more boldly about my faith. I'm going to start prioritizing the things that really matter. And about a week later, a month later, 6 months later, that starts to fade again. And we start to drift again back into, hey, you know what? I'm here. I got time. I've got tomorrow. I have next year. We can do that in another season. I just kind of want to take it easy for a while. And we forget that urgency of the moment, that there's going to be a day when that heart beats for the last time. And when we arrive at the destination we're all going to right now, which is our own funeral. And I know yesterday, all over again for me, just as one more fruit of Henry Williams' life, was for me yesterday to walk away from that moment and say, God, I so want this life to count. Forgive me for losing track of how precious these heartbeats are. You know how close the last one is to right now. But sometimes I lose sight. I want to share a story, and then we'll just kind of park it there today, and we'll pick up again. We've got some time to journey together. But Jesus understood this, and we're going to see so much of this over the next few weeks. Jesus understood so much of the dimensions of eternity, and he taught about eternity all the time. In fact, if you read the four Gospels, Jesus always talking about paradise. He's talking about heaven. He's talking about the kingdom of God. Or he's talking about hell and what happens to us if we don't invest with him and invest our dash in the things that really matter. And in this particular story he comes to, it's one that would be familiar to you if you've been around church, but it'll ring true to all of us, but especially to those of you who maybe haven't heard a lot of the teachings of Jesus. And it's found in Luke's Gospel, chapter 12, verse 13. And Jesus is just talking about that urgency of seeing the reality and the potential of the dash that's in our lives. And this is what Jesus says. It says, someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And Jesus replied, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter between you?" So let me just set up the backdrop here. The brother is all preoccupied with the family's wealth and when the inheritance is going to get divided out a certain way. So the brother's thinking like we're thinking. I'm on earth. This is it. This is life. Our family has some money. I want to get the money that I should get from the family because that's going to set me up to do X, Y, and Z. And that's the lens through which he's looking at life. So if you just put that in our context, it's the lens of our job, the lens of the career we're in, the lens of the success we want to have, the opportunities we want to experience, the travel that we're planning and hoping to do, the money that we've made, the family that we have, the things that we're looking through to see this is what life is really all about. And we just want to make sure we get our fair share of life. And so this brother is just saying to Jesus, "Hey, you look like a guy with some spiritual authority. Tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." And Jesus said, "Hey, that's really not what I came to do. That's not my job. I'm here to do a lot of things. Arbitrating the inheritance between you and your brother is not really one of them, but let me paint a bigger picture for you." And he told this parable. Verse 16. "The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. Now, yours may not be a crop. Yours may be a career. It may be a family. It may be a legacy. Produce some good stuff was coming. And he thought to himself, 'What shall I do? I have no place to store my crops.' And so he said," Jesus is telling this story, "'This is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barn and build a bigger barn. And there I'll store all my grain and all my goods. And I'll say to myself," this is the part where we really see the condition of the human heart. He said, "I'll say to myself, 'You have plenty of good things.'" That's the key, good things. Good things can get in the way of a lot of great stuff God wants to do in our lives. "You have plenty of good things laid up for many years." So basically, Jesus is saying, this guy said, "I got a lot of good stuff in a really big barn for all the years to come. I'm set." And so this is his conclusion. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. And isn't that the American dream? Make enough so that you can retire and take it easy and eat, drink, and be merry. Make enough so you can cash out of work, get an RV, drive around the country for the next 30 years. But, verse 20, "God said to him, 'You fool.'" Man, I don't want God to say that to me. Of all the things to have God Almighty say to you, this is not the one. "This very night, your life will be demanded from you." And then he adds insult to injury to this poor guy in the parable. "And then who will get what you have prepared for yourself?" And then he caps it with verse 21. "This is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself but is not rich towards God." Now that's a message for another day that we're going to talk about, and I can't wait for that message to come. You've heard the phrase, "You can't take it with you." Well, I'm gonna come with a different viewpoint on that in a few weeks. Never seen a U-Haul trailer at a cemetery. All that kind of thinking. And that's kind of the point Jesus was kind of driving at. But on the way, didn't he make a more powerful statement than what the world's trying to tell us when it tells us just work as hard as you can so you can cash out of the system so that you can take it easy in life and then you can eat and drink and be merry. You can put your own terms on that so you can travel and see the world and not work and just have a simpler life and have some hobbies and, you know, just enjoy what you'd work so hard to earn. And we forget that there's a big elephant in the room called life, called death. And there's a moment when we don't have any more heartbeats. And when that moment comes, we don't have any more heartbeats. And when we don't have any more heartbeats, our opportunity on this earth is gone. and our opportunity to influence people, to share the gospel, to live for the things that matter, to be the kind of people God has called us to be, to pour into our friends and our family, to prioritize what really matters, and to invest in heaven is gone. You know, the way for me to say that today as we close is simply this. I was thinking about the old phones. Anybody remember the old phones? You know, you used to pick up the phone. Did anybody remember that? And what was on there when you picked up the phone? A dial tone. You remember that? That's what happened. It used to be that way. Now you don't do that anymore because you just get your smartphone out and you start dialing your recents. But wouldn't it be cool if they put that back on the iPhone? Just pick up your phone and you just heard that? And then that got annoying, and so the little lady would come on and say, what? If you'd like to make a call, please hang up and try your number again later. I.e., we're not going to sit here and do this all day. You know, that lady, she was married to Bell South, and she was just trying to let us know, hey, you know, we this costs money, this little thing you're hearing, and we're not going to do that all day, so try it again. We'll start back all over again. And then we would dial, and we'd dial these numbers. I think that's the picture that I want to leave with us today. That life, the dash, is like one of the beeps. That's it. You say, no, I want it to be longer. No, that's it. And it's a miraculous thing because no one can quite describe how your heart started beating. And only God knows, and he knows because it's written in his book, Psalm 139, the very last time your heart beats. And that little dash in between, it's like that. And then there is eternity, either in heaven with God or without God. And that is is that affects everything about that. What you do with that determines everything about that. That little dash impacts your forever future. The 7 years, the 17 years, the 27 years, the 37 years, the 47 years, the 77 years impacts forever. Everybody gets that. And I wanted to begin today by bringing us back around this little precious window called life. And I want to ask you today, what do you want your dash to be about? And do you want to have said in that day, I wish I had cared less about what people thought. I wish I really hadn't cared so much about what my neighbors thought about me going and telling them about Jesus. Because I was all concerned that they were going to think I was an idiot, think I was a freak, and think I was some kind of bizarre Christian nut job. I wish I hadn't spent all my money on stuff I wish I had looked into the eyes of Jesus more and gained the courage that he has to walk out in life in the highs and the lows and the good and the bad and the darkness and in the light and say, you know what, it is hard right now, but Jesus is greater. In this little life I've got, I'm going to proclaim that Jesus is alive and that my hope is in someone who has conquered death, hell, and the grave. I am not going to be a complainer in this life. I'm not going to be beat down by circumstances. I'm not going to be dragged under by the undertow of negativity and all the heartbreak of this world and just seep into depression and seep into denial and numb myself and sort of go on autopilot and comatose living. I'm going to rise up out of that and say, you know what, I've only got a certain number of heartbeats and maybe it is a hard life and maybe it is a broken world and maybe it's not all adding up the way I thought it was, but I do know Jesus. Thank you very much. And so in the beep, I'm going to proclaim Jesus, because I know there's a tone coming and I want in that tone to have the reward of saying in the beep, I proclaim Jesus, because the beep determines everything about the tone. I don't want to say, you know what, God put me on a platform. He gave me opportunity. He gave me a chance. He gave me connections. He gave me conversations. He put me in rooms with people that I didn't know. He gave me little moments to give a 2-minute answer. I'm so glad now that I didn't bite my tongue, that I didn't back down, that I wasn't afraid, that I didn't, you know, say, well, I don't know. I just don't want to upset anybody. I'm so glad that I proclaimed Jesus with my life. I'm so glad that I talked about the things that really matter. I'm so glad I invested in the kingdom, because hello, the beep set the tone. The beep set the tone. And now the tone is forever. And I can't go back. I can't undo it. I can't rewind. I can't say, man, please give me one more chance. So I just want to leave us with that tonight. Can we just maybe ask God over these next few weeks to awaken us to the reality of heaven, to awaken us to the reality of hell, to awaken us to the reality of eternity, to blow us up out of the little bunker of this world and to live lives that matter for him. And to quote, because it's the new year for the students tonight, and they can help the parents with this on the way home, but to quote DJ Snake and Little John, do you know where I'm going with this? Where am I going with this? Turn down for what? You know, when you bring the big theologians in, it really moves the people. This is what I've learned, you know? If you don't know what we're talking about, consider yourself blessed of God and highly favored. You're really not missing a lot. It's not one of the great masterpieces of lyrical work. But it's the attitude of the new generation. Can we close with this? This is a good closing. Which basically says, what? You gonna shut this party down? Like what, the cops are coming? Somebody called their mom? We got a whole generation wanting to say, I tell you what, turn down for what? What? You're not stopping this. You're not stopping this. Turn down for what? What? Turn down for what? Turn down for, no, turn down for what? That's the whole song, by the way. I'd love to get into the verses and the chorus, but that's it. That's what you get. It's one of those you can instantly catch on. I was in a football locker room last night, and you can't be in a good football locker room without some good hip-hop music playing. And so it's kind of on low. It's just like low vibing before the game, and turn down for what? And I was like, man, I believe that. I believe that. I wish that song belonged to the church and not to the world, because the world is clueless. And the world is just clueless. They got all this attitude, all this, man. It's like, you don't have a clue, man. This very night, your life might be required of you, and you are going to absolutely freak out when you understand how precious this dash was that God gave you, and you absolutely wasted it. That's going to be your turn down for what? Turn down because God's glory is now on display, and let's just all back down a step and understand who Jesus is. But that song belongs to the world. It's their anthem. It ought to be our anthem. Our anthem is we turned down because we thought somebody didn't want to hear. We turned down because we were tired. We turned down because we just weren't feeling it that day. We turned down because we were worried about what somebody would think. We turned down because we thought somebody might think we're Jesus crazy. We turned down because we thought we might be the only one. We turned down because, you know, we just wanted to make it about us and not about somebody else. We turned down because we were afraid that we might get persecuted or made fun of. So that's what we turned down for. We turned down because we were preoccupied with money or with sex or with pleasure or with fame or with some other glitz and glamour of this world. So we turned down. We turned down because we'd already been to church 100 times in the year, and so we'd already had enough for 1 year. That's why we turned down. We turned down for so many reasons, and we ought to be the people saying, turn down for what? We're not backing down. We're not quieting down. We got this one precious thing called life, this one little dash called life, and with it, we are going to offer it back to God, not in busyness, but in urgency. Say, I want it to count. I want it to count.